Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, tops and bottoms of all kinds. Good morning to the haters and the lovers. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
Kalo, the Costco ho, Lopresto on the board, having a little discussion before we started up today. Very interesting. We were talking about, what was that? I didn't even see it. It was in the paper, and some FBI planted a dude in the mob. Is that what we were talking about,
Kalo?
Yes, that's what they were alleging. And apparently the FBI agent was so convincing that the mafia was going to open the books on him.
Yes. All right, and then you said, you said what a bunch of holes.
Yes.
And I said, who are we referring to, the FBI or the mob, I mean, in your case? And you said, I'm not going to answer that.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's hard to tell whose side anyone's on when the villains are cool, isn't it? Hey, man, those are cool villains. Sopranos made them cool. But you always kind of, you know, because of The Godfather and all those other movies, have a history of sort of romanticizing the mob. You tend to, sometimes they're a little too human, aren't they?
Well, you know, were they desperate?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you hear these stories that the mob really needs to replenish its ranks after a bloodbath or something.
Right.
So they let a bunch of people in. And sometimes, Donnie Brasco was a situation that people...
You know, movie, in retrospect, like, you know, I've watched that movie again. That's a really good movie. I mean, I the first time I saw it, I thought it was okay. But the second time I saw it, I really liked that film.
Yeah, I mean, there are always people trying to infiltrate the mob now. This is nothing new.
Right. And now they need to figure out how to infiltrate Al-Qaeda, thank you. I mean, it's like, you know, I know that, you know, obviously they've had some success in infiltrating the mob because I guess there's plenty of guys that speak Italian-American. there's not an issue with, you know, the language and whatnot. Can I ask you a question, Riley? I finally bought, you know, I go to these 99-cent stores, all right? And I actually bought something, that and I buy things at the 99-cent store, and I bring it home, and if it breaks, I'm like, I don't understand. Why the hell is it, you know, I'm going to go back to the 99-cent store and ask them why my 99-cent item broke. But I finally found something yesterday. I'm crawling all over Astoria. I don't have a Staples nearby or Office Supply. I need Staples, right?
Yeah.
I get 5,000 Chinese Staples for 99 cents. 5,000 Staples. I'm figuring, how the hell could that be? How could I go wrong with Staples? They're just Staples. So far, so good, Riley.
So far, so good?
So far, so good. What I want to know is, what's the racket, man? What's the scam? Why do these places have regular or seemingly regular products for almost nothing? You know, like dish soap, like toilet paper, like paper towels, like shampoo, toothpaste, for nothing. Granted, sometimes the label on the toothpaste is in Ukrainian,
yeah.
And I don't understand, or Spanish. But what is the racket? Is it real stuff or is it what?
It's real stuff. It's deregulation. It's part of the American way. They want to get stuff into the hands of consumers at the lowest possible price. So if they import it from Chechnya, who cares?
But it's American consumer products that has already been out and about in the world and come back? Are they re-exporting? What are you laughing at, Chris? What, did I say something funny?
Well, if the toothpaste label is in Ukrainian, how do you know it's toothpaste?
Because it's got the label, you know, it's got the Crest label.
It's got the teeth, the people scrubbing.
It could be KY jelly, dude.
No, but it's got the, you know, the familiar red triangle, the Crest logo. You know, I don't think they're saying, here's what we'll do. We'll put KY jelly and use the same label as Crest because people are familiar with this product in that label. You know what I mean? What are you thinking?
You know what? Some of it may be stuff that they had planned on sending out of the country. They decide not to send it out. It gets diverted. It falls off the back of a truck.
Well, Riley, I've come up with that as well. I thought you were going to give me some conclusive evidence.
No, there's no conclusive evidence. It's knockoff stuff.
But it's knockoff, but it's the regular stuff, so I shouldn't feel bad about buying it.
You shouldn't feel bad about buying it.
But it's weird because it's so cheap, isn't
Does
it?
Does it work for you?
I don't know. I haven't bought certain things. I mean, the staples seem fine.
Look, 1.3 billion Chinese are never wrong. So they did the staples, they'll be fine.
But this is just, what's up, Caleb?
Don't buy the condoms.
I'm not going to buy the condoms. Okay?
He's a married guy, for God's sake, Kalo.
I don't understand my 99 cent for a dozen. Yeah. No, I guess it's a similar thing to what Walmart does on some level. They import all this stuff, but it's obviously not a big operation, and this is obviously stuff that's been... I just don't understand where it falls off the truck.
No. What happens in many cases, this is true of, like, odd lot stores and places like that as well, is that they over-manufacture stuff.
Right.
People have too much inventory. They got to get rid of the inventory. You know where they do it a lot? Is with cigars. If they have a barn full of cigars in Honduras someplace,
yeah.
They can't sell them. Hondurans ain't going to smoke all of them.
Right.
They gotta, so somebody goes down there and says, all right, it costs you 25 cents
yeah.
per cigar to make. I'll buy the whole lot of them for 10 cents a pop.
Why, because they're just going to go bad? Or no, what's
no that? It's that they're taking up space.
All right, I get it.
And the people want to convert this inventory into cash.
Okay.
So what they do is they sell it, they sell it for 15 cents. The guy sells it for 20, and everybody thinks you're getting a deal on the cigar.
Yeah.
Same difference in a 99-cent store.
So
same principle.
I get the weirdest paranoia, though. I get the weirdest paranoia in 99-cent stores. Like, for some reason, because it's 99 cents or it's a dollar, that's something that should be $5, I'm like, well, something's got to be wrong with it. That, I get, like, styrofoam cups for my tea, like, when I come to work.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm thinking, like, well, these are probably, you know, styrofoam cups made under unregulated styrofoam cup manufacturing law. There's no laws regulating the makers of this styrofoam cup, and it could be, where's this come from? Out in the story, man, they have, you know, in some of those delis, you have jars of pickles from the Ukraine.
Oh, God,
there's, like, a thing, like, canned food from Turkey, and I don't, you know, I'm not saying that stuff's bad. I got no problem with those countries, but you know, and I don't know how.
Marin, you have to get used to living in a city that has 178 different ethnicities.
But see, I think I drank the Kool-Aid on some level, because we can't trust the FDA here. You can't trust the regulators here. They're all, you know, pimped out by the meat packing industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, why am I, you know, there's some part of my brain that's sort of like, I pick up some canned food from Turkey, and I'm like, this can't be good. It was made in Turkey. How can it be good? They probably don't have clean factories. It's food.
Hey, the Turks don't buy. Don't mess with it. Eat it.
I got no problem with the Turkish people. I just, like, I don't know why I'm brainwashed like this. Even when I bought Tupperware containers at the 99-cent store, I'm like, who knows what this plastic comes from? I mean, you know, there's no regulation with this plastic. And now I read that there's, that it's radiated plastic. I got problems, Chris. You know what else is, it's not even my problem. It's just, this is what I deal with. You know, like, I got too much free time on my hands. God forbid I write a joke.
Yeah,
am I right? God forbid I sit down and write a joke. I got to sit there and go, like, wow, these staples are pretty good. I'm just waiting for a staple to break. So I can go, okay, see, they even go out of their way to make crappy staples. You know what I mean? That's what I'm waiting for. That's my big social movement moment.
Hey, Kayla, you know what we ought to do? Send them to a Korean market. Not a Korean market.
Korean supermarket?
Yeah.
I love those places.
They don't love you.
They don't?
No,
but I go into those places, and there's foods there that you're like, what the hell is that?
That's right.
What do you do with that? You've seen those clams that are the size of a shoe?
Yeah.
You know those clams with just like a tongue hanging out of it, a foot long?
But they're not meant for you.
Obviously.
You know what I'm saying? Because in some Korean, I don't want to stereotype it. You go into some markets, the supermarkets now,
yeah.
where Koreans buy from Koreans.
Yeah.
And, you know, you walk in there, you're not Korean. It doesn't matter whether you're black, white,
yeah.
Latino, Middle Eastern, or whatever. They look at you like, what are you doing here?
We
got a store for you on down the block that we own, maybe.
With a markup store.
It's a markup store.
But sometimes the vegetables are huge. That's another thing I don't wonder about. There's mutated vegetables. Have you seen some of these vegetables that are just too big? You're like, broccoli's not supposed to be that big. What are they putting in the broccoli? You know, or like celery and stuff. I don't know where it comes from. You know, I've gotten too used to, this is brainwashing on behalf of this country in my head, that I've gotten used to things being a certain way. But I go to health food stores. You know what? I'm in trouble, Chris. I bought, I'm putting soy milk in my tea.
Oh, come on.
I'm on a slippery slope.
Man.
I'm on a slippery slope.
I saw this with my own two eyes, Chris.
I'm on a slippery slope.
You created a monster, Lopresto.
Not only am I going to win the bet, but I'm going to win it with a vengeance. I'm going to come in here one day with, you know, Birkenstocks, and my hair is going to be all long, and I'm going to be wearing hemp underwear, and I'm going to go, Chris, guess what? Today honors the first day I'm not funny anymore.
I definitely retract this bet. It's like it out of hand.
You better do it by Earth Day.
All right. Yeah, the bet, if you don't know, is that Chris bet me I couldn't stay off the red meat, which I have for over a month. Not because of the bet, just because I wanted to see if I could change my lifestyle. And I got to be honest with you, too many legumes.
Too many?
Right? Yeah, too many legumes, man. I spend way too much time going, what can I do with split yellow peas? Come on.
You tried limes yet?
That's a question that should never be asked.
I love lima.
I made a pretty good soup, buddy, with you and your no ask the question.
I like lima beans.
I like baby
lima. I love lima beans.
Yeah. I made me and Pashman have to have a crock pot discussion. Can we tease this story here real quick, as they say in radio lingo? But we don't have that much time, Riley, but apparently before the break, but apparently they want to raise the hours that truckers have to work. And speaking of Walmart, they're behind this legislation.
Yes, they are behind this legislation. They want to make it, they say, easier for truckers to actually do their jobs. This is Congressman John Boozman from Arkansas. By the way, his district includes Walmart's headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas, sponsoring a bill that would allow a longer workday as long as the trucker took an unpaid, repeat, unpaid 2-hour break.
I just don't know what the small print is in on that. And you know, this is these guys already work really hard, and you know, you can't have them out on the roads after being too exhausted. There's a lot of accidents, like 5,000 fatal accidents in 2004 with these big rigs. And I wish we'd get some feedback from some truckers out there.
Yeah. Now, the current rules say that the workday for truckers is 14 hours, and they can only drive for 11 hours consecutively. That gives them 3 hours to eat and do unload cargo, that sort of thing. What they're trying to do now is up it to 16 hours from 14 hours.
I wonder what the stipulations are, what the pay hike is, or if there's any change. If you're a trucker and you got any information or you have a reaction, 866-303-2270, because it just seems there's a little bit of a blind spot in this story, and you got to know more than we do.
Yeah.
If you are out there, if you're listening and you want to give us some feedback, give us a call. We'll be back. We're going to talk a little bit about black enrollment in the Army is way down, and there's a lot of other stories that we're going to play off of this one in our conversation after the break. So stay with us. It's 17 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Hey, 22 past the hour, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're taking calls from truckers in reaction to the proposed law to bring the workday up to 16 hours with a 3-hour required downtime, non-paid downtime. And it looks like we got a lot of people out on the highway on the phone. Anthony, he thinks he's in Mississippi. Good morning, Anthony.
Hey, Anthony.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
All right. How you doing?
Tell us what you think of this.
I'm bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning. Okay, maybe not bushy-tailed.
What do you think about this this proposal? Does it work for you?
I have no problem with it. I mean, right now, the way it is I get to a receiver. If I've got to sit and wait, I utilize that time. I put myself in a sleeper.
So, okay, so now let me understand something. This means that you are on 3 hours of time that you might have to sit and wait for the job. How exactly does this proposal work as well? What does it mean to you?
Okay, now, for me, okay, I'm an owner-operator. If I get to a receiver, in my contract, they have 2 hours to get me unloaded.
Okay.
I don't get paid for that. Anything after that 2 hours, I get paid $30 an hour to sit there.
Okay.
So, if they want to take an extra 2 hours to unload me, hey, you know, so be it. That's more money in my pocket.
Okay. So that's that's really what this law is about. It's more about expanding the unloading time and the loading time.
You know, I'd much rather have them get the I was listening to Mike Malloy earlier, and they had drivers calling in and complaining about the fact that Walmart charges drivers to get up unload their own product.
Right.
Well, that money doesn't come out of my pocket. It comes out of the company's pocket. And as far as I'm concerned, if Walmart's in favor of giving me more hours to work during the day, and I can actually take 3 hours of it on unpaid and do what I want to do,
yeah.
Hey, I'm all behind it.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Anthony.
Thanks, Anthony.
That's interesting. It's like we don't
owner operator.
That makes a big difference, doesn't it? So, Mike in Texas, Mike, what's your opinion of this new proposal?
I'm kind of happy it's happening. I'm an owner-operator also out of Houston. I've talked to a lot of company drivers, and these guys are always the big George Bush supporters because Republicans haven't stepped on their toes yet.
Right.
So now with the new hours of service deal and them having to sit around for 3 hours and not get paid for it, now they get to look at it from our point of view. And, because, the biggest gripe is, oh, war. I ain't going to pay for that fuel. You know, and it's like, hey, now you're going to get your toes stepped on. Welcome to our world.
Okay, so there is a difference between somebody who's driving a rig for a company and an owner-operator.
Well, the owner-operators, we get paid basically a flat rate. We negotiate what we get, and then we get paid. But a company driver, they get paid the mileage chart, basically what the mileage pays. Some are paid hourly, some are paid salary. And the hourly guys, they lollygag around and, you know, basically they waste as much time as they can making a delivery.
Yeah.
And this way it's going to hurt them. And now they get to see it from our point of view, getting stepped on. Instead of getting stepped on the fuel pricing, they're getting stepped on in other ways. I spent $35,000 extra in fuel last year.
Wow.
And, you know, and just for national uses, I had a company driver tell me, oh, you get to write that off. I said, yeah, I do, but let's look at it this way. Here's $35,000 in my hand. If I give the government $5,000 or $6,000 that they want, I still have $29,000, $30,000 in my head.
Yeah.
Instead, this all went to Big Oil.
Right.
There you go.
Well, thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Mike.
So he's got sort of, you know, he thinks it's payback time for the company drivers.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Let's take another call. B.A. in Missouri. B.A., how are you?
Good morning, B.A.
We only got a minute. What do you got? Yeah.
Okay, well, the thing about this is that we're only allowed to drive, like I'm a company driver, we're only allowed to drive 11 hours a day. Once the clock starts, nothing stops the clock until we either go in, until we're done, you know. The 2 hours for me would be great because I could drive 5 hours and then this will stop my clock. I can take a shower, have a meal, take a walk,
right,
do something, and then I can start my clock again rather
right.
than having to just keep driving, eating while I'm driving, you know, being able to take almost like half an hour.
Sure, sure. Okay. Okay, thanks a lot.
I love you guys. I love you guys.
Thank you.
Great show.
Thank you a lot, B.A.
B.A.
So it seems that a lot of the drivers on both sides of the company and owner operator are for this thing.
For this thing, yeah. And B.A.'s point is that it gives her more flexibility in terms of how she decides to use her time. It's fascinating.
And also, I think a lot of us don't understand the unique personalities of truck drivers. I mean, a lot of them like to drive.
Well, we understand because we got a lot of them listening to us. We thank them all for the phone call. When we come back, we're going to talk about the recruitment of blacks into the Army because it's going down. Mm-hmm. When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Today is Thursday. It's going all right.
Yeah.
Thursday feels okay.
Feels all right.
I can't, you know, I get that itch. You know, I mean, I guess I've just become a working stiff, man. I feel Friday coming. You know what I mean? You know what I look forward to most?
What?
Sleeping.
There you go.
Here's George Bush is on the road with his Screw the Future Roadshow, pushing his Social Security plan. So we got George Bush's Palm Pilot for today. 7 a.m., wake up. Today, Kentucky and Alabama. My Social Security is going south. Wait, rephrase that. Here we go. 9:55 a.m., leave on Southern Tour. Note, do not refer to it as March Madness. 12 p.m., Social Security, Kentucky, Center for the Arts, Louisville. Tell them, I got rid of Dan Rather, and now I'll get rid of Social Security. All right, 3:50 p.m., Social Security, Auburn University, Montgomery, Alabama. Tell them, Alabama has always been my sweet home, Alabama. Somebody play Freebird. 5 p.m., send Bill Clinton a note at the hospital. I'm in the South dismantling your legacy. Get well soon. 7 p.m., watch video of the pacifier. Put Vin Diesel on shortlist for next year's Kennedy Center honors. And 10 p.m., bedtime. Whew, shredding safety nets is hard work. That's the president.
We're going to get into that later on this morning, too.
Yeah, we're going to. We got Brendan P.W. McDonald out there in the field, actually in Kentucky, covering the tour. Hopefully, we'll get him on the phone. Now, look, you know, in Michael Moore's film Fahrenheit 9/11, you saw the nature of predatory recruiting. Now, predatory recruiting is done by, you know, all all factions of the military, and they focus on minorities. They focus on people who are in economically challenged conditions. And you know, we're going to play this piece from the film. I'm sure you remember it in the parking lot with the Marine recruiters, and then we're going to talk a little bit about how this is slowly starting to not work.
Yeah,
which is good. Yeah, go ahead.
Right now, there's somebody out there who wants to be a Marine but has no idea how to do it.
Where you work at?
I work at KOC on Dorton Lapeer.
You can hook us up with some deals.
Yeah,
they're waiting to get recruited.
I don't know. I'm probably going to try to get a little career in music or something.
Career music. Maybe we can get you a career in music, you know, let the Marines go for it. I'm sure you know who Shaggy is, right?
Yeah.
You know anything about him?
Yeah, he's the Jamaican.
Yeah? How about a former Marine?
Oh.
Did you know it?
You definitely need to know discipline if you're going to get into music.
Yeah, I understand.
Especially discipline with the money. Right. When you make a million, you need to manage that money. So come in the office, we can sit down and talk, show you everything we know about the Marines. Sound like a plan?
What do you got going on later this afternoon?
How about tomorrow?
We'll say right around 10 o'clock Monday morning.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Okay.
You want me to come pick you up?
Yeah. You go that way. I go this way. We corner.
Here's my card. What I want to do, ma'am, real quick is just get some information from you so I can scratch you off my list saying I've already talked to you and, you know, you're not interested. Is that cool?
Yeah.
All right. What's your name?
What's your phone number?
What's your address, Mario?
Add another one to the list.
That's from Fahrenheit 9/11. You know, right when the guy said KFC, sweet, I would have walked away. What kind? And just the pandering and the pitch. You know, when you make millions of dollars, you want to have the discipline to know how to manage that money. I mean, it's unbelievable the kind of mind. You know, they're just screwing with the guy's head.
I wonder if Shaggy is asking for royalties from the Marine Corps now. It's interesting because I've met Shaggy, talked to him a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And he fought during the first Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Marine during the first Gulf War. But I don't think he figures that Marine recruiters are running around tossing his name to people, you know,
in their pitch.
You know, Shaggy.
So
you
now,
what music career? Shaggy?
Yeah. So their pitch and their is starting to disintegrate because it's interesting to me with these the drop in Black Army recruits. I mean, and also a slider drop in the Marines, Mark Riley, is
yes.
That I think that the young Black people are getting hip to the fact that, you know, this is not just a career move that they're making when they get into the armed forces. They're not, you know, it's not just a money move. Their life is at risk, and I think that there is an element of protest in this decline.
Well, what's interesting, Mark, is if you look over the arc of the history of Black participation in the armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that until 1948, Blacks were segregated in the armed forces legally until Truman signed the executive order that desegregated the military. For a long period of American history, Blacks went into the military to prove a point to prove a series of points.
And some of that legacy of loyalty still lingers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you look at the Tuskegee Airmen,
sure.
They had a point to prove because people thought that Blacks couldn't fly planes in combat. Even before that, during the Civil War, there were questions about Lincoln recruiting Black troops because they thought Black troops would run at the sight of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been this stigma, this racist stigma attached to Blacks and military service. And, of course, there was also the specter of Blacks coming back from wars with guns, and nothing scared America more at the turn of the 20th century than Blacks with guns. The Brownsville raid, the way people were treated after the First World War and the Second World War to a large extent. Now you fast forward into the 1960s and 70s, where the Army, and very specifically the Army, was a place where young men, young boys, could become men.
Mm-hmm.
The training, the discipline, and as time went on, the idea that you could learn a trade. Let's say, for the sake of argument, you went to a technical high school. You learn a little bit about automobiles.
Sure.
You want to work in some kind of an automobile diagnostic. What better place to really hone your skills than to get into the Army or get into the armed forces?
Service the Jeeps.
Service the Jeeps, the trucks. A lot of people, particularly people from the Black community during hard economic times, took the option of going into the armed forces so they could learn these kinds of stuff. For example, helicopter, people that can maintain a helicopter engine. That's money in the bank.
Absolutely, because after the Army, you can open up a helicopter repair shop in almost any city.
You could work for any helicopter company, Sikorsky or whoever. You could work out at one of the airports, and you could make a living. You could feed your family. What the studies are now starting to show is that Black opposition to the war in Iraq is being manifested in this younger generation. You know, people are always talking about the differences between younger Blacks and older Blacks. Well, on this, Black folks seem to be united. Younger blacks are not down with the war in Iraq, and they don't want to go overseas to fight that war for an indeterminate period of time when they opposed the war in the first place.
Right, and I want to ask you a question. Now, first of all, these numbers, the percentage of Army recruits who are African-American has dropped from nearly 30% in 1980 to 23% in 2000 to 13.9% in 2005. What about the secret history is that, you know, in a lot of conflicts, blacks were used in overly risky situations. They were used as cannon fodder. They were used people who would go out into the minefields. Is that a true thing?
Well, what happened was blacks were disproportionately in the infantry divisions. Those are the soldiers. Those are the grunts. Those are the people that go out and do that kind of work. Now, the flip side of that, Mark, is that the armed forces, because they did desegregate actually before the rest of American society, the armed forces has also been a way for blacks to advance. People would in the military be very quick to tell you that there are more blacks in high-level positions in the armed forces than there are blacks in corporate America in the same equivalent high-level position.
So I guess in some level, if depending on the nature of the conflicts that are going on in the world, if you survive the infantry, you will definitely rise in the ranks.
Well, I mean, look, Colin Powell rose to the top of his game. But, of course, there's only that, that's one guy. The bottom line is that the idea that blacks would go into the military, and by the way, this is also bleeding over into females, but the idea that blacks go into the military to learn a trade, to learn a skill, that's why most of them were going in, whether it's the reserves, the National Guard, whatever, it's to learn a skill. And a lot of people don't realize this. When people, particularly in urban areas, started seeing large numbers of people of color coming back in body bags, part of the reason for that is because legal immigrants oftentimes go into the armed forces as a means to fast-track their citizenship. You go in the army, you do your time, you come out, bam, you get made a citizen. You don't have to go through the long legal procedures that civilians do.
Sure.
Because you've served your country at that point.
Now, what's interesting also is that, the Marines and the Army have dropped because, those are the most dangerous positions. And, and the Air Force and the Navy
have
met their recruitment numbers.
Yeah, yeah. They've met their because they aren't perceived as being in the line of fire in Iraq.
And also, I think the Navy and the Air Force have a different level of prestige. I think the sort of macho level of prestige offered, by the sort of infantry and the grunt and the Marines, the sort of like tough as nails thing, is different. You always get the feeling that Navy and the Air Force are sort of a little loftier. Am I wrong about the
they do, particularly the Air Force. They build themselves as a glamour kind of job. These are the jobs where you learn how to do you can do it in the Army too, but you learn how to do the helicopters, you learn all of that stuff with flight.
I think I saw that on the commercial. Don't want to get too dirty? The Air Force.
There you go. And there are all of these studies that are being done by the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one was actually one of the studies was done in August of 2004, and it says more African Americans identify having to fight for a cause they don't support as a barrier to military service.
Well, that's interesting that you definitely get, if you want to find, real anti-war protests, this is about as pure as you can get. You got plenty of people that want to march in the streets and will march in the streets and fight for diversity, but the action of like, look, we're not going to buy this anymore because we don't believe that this country is supposed to be in this war is a profound statement that gets buried in a lot of these stories. It's not just about, it's not just about fear of death, which, anyone has, but it's really, specifically about, members of the black community saying, this isn't worth dying for, which is a complete turn on that legacy of loyalty.
Yeah, it is. And see, the other thing that it impacts, Mark, is the Army's stated goal of increasing their ranks by 30,000 soldiers. If blacks become a lower percentage, of course, that means whites and Latinos and Asians become a higher percentage. But still, if blacks who have been the bulwark of this recruiting effort start falling off and continue to fall off, let's say the next class gets down as low as 10%, then you're not going to meet your goal of expanding the Army itself by 30,000 people. It's not going to happen.
Which is frightening because that the Pentagon and the White House can make you be in the service. Speculating about that is getting more and more frightening. I get dispatches from the fringe that say, we're on the precipice of a draft, but who knows? When we come back, We are going to talk about the Hispanic and Latino, or I guess that would be the same, the Latino community's disenfranchisement and self sort of proclaimed, detachment from the Democratic Party. When we come back after this break, it's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil.
In 3 hours or less,
Air America Radio.
Are you getting... Fifties past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Oh, my... Ow, I just got a paper cut.
Somebody get first aid.
I got a paper
First aid. Security.
It hurt, man. Here's the liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound with my blood on it, apparently. One, Bill Clinton's in the hospital. Donate a kidney. He doesn't need one, but it would be a nice gesture. It would be a nice gesture, people. Why not a kidney? You got two. Come on. You're not using both of them. Two, stand at the base of spewing Mount St. Helens with a sign that reads, Mother Nature herself rebels against Bush's environmental policies. Three, observe Procrastination Week by raising awareness of procrastinators or the Alacrity Challenge. Wow, is it Thursday already?
Yeah.
Man. Four, suggest to the Republicans that before their new bankruptcy laws go into effect, they should declare the bankruptcy of their ideas. How's that? All right. Five, today's phrase, just drop it in the conversation. So they just determined that King Tut wasn't murdered, man. He's the last person from the Middle East whose death can't be traced to U.S. policies. Wake up, sheeple. It's genocide in the library, and we're all Colonel Mustard. How's that? Well, good. Now, let's, before we get into more stuff. Wow, what did you just throw in there? A rock, Chris? I just heard something throw. What just went into the garbage? What was it?
The liberal agenda.
Oh, really? So let me get mine in there, too.
Well,
I guess it didn't go in. All right, anyways. Sorry, we're having fun today. Is that okay with you people? A little fun? Protest. How about that? Protest President Bush's plan to destroy Social Security. Bush will be in Memphis tomorrow, and we got a lot of listeners in Memphis on WWTQ 680 AM. So get out to the High Point Pinch parking lot at 111 Jackson, north of the Cannon Center, tomorrow starting at 7 AM. Go to MidSouthPeace.org for more information if you are in the Memphis area. I will be at Cobb's Comedy Club April 1st and 2nd. You can go to morningsedition.com to the tour dates to get info. If you're listening to 960 AM, The Quake in San Francisco, this is for you. I'm reaching out. Come down and see me.
You.
Here we go. Now let's talk about this. To ease into this this broader disenfranchisement of minorities and what the GOP is doing to get them in. This is an active, they are very active in this, and I don't hear much about the Democrats doing hardly anything anymore, but the Republicans are putting together a political committee or an action group. What would you call it? A committee of African American leaders.
Yes.
To
reach out to the black community. This is the Republican Party who got, whose standard bearer, by the way, got 11% of the black vote in the presidential election, but, for example, got 16% of the vote in Ohio, which helped secure his victory there, given that he only got 9% in the 2000 presidential election.
And mind you, those were the only 16% of the African-American community that were able to actually get to the machines.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But, Ken Mellman, who's the chair of the Republican National Committee, is taking this whole thing very seriously. And it's important because it's happening on a number of fronts and not just in the black community. In the black community today, there is going to be this announcement of this committee. And on this committee will include Ed Gillespie, the former RNC chair, Bishop Keith Butler, who's pastor of a church in Detroit, and he may run for the United States Senate as a black conservative in Michigan, Alfonso Jackson, who's secretary of HUD, Housing and Urban Development, National Black Chamber of Commerce President Harry Alford, and one of the most prominent but not well-known black conservatives, Republican Maryland Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele, who was one of the point people, I believe, that welcomed a couple of very prominent members of the Bush administration in Prince George's County a couple of weeks back.
These guys are so, you know, they're so damn organized. It's annoying.
It's annoying, but, I mean, they have a plan here.
A protracted long-term plan.
Yes, a protracted long-term plan to say, you know what, we are going to go after this vote, which we only got 9% of. If the Democrats were only as single-minded and purposeful about going after some of the some, you know, some of the places where, you know, some of the states where Bush won by huge numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Why not go after those folks? Howard Dean is actually starting that ball rolling. But understand that now, as opposed to, let's go back 8 years, or even further back than that, you go back to a time when in the Republican Party, the predominant philosophy among African Americans was the moderate section of the party.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Alan Keyes was out there to the right, but he was out there basically by himself.
Right.
What's happened over the last few election cycles is that there are more and more black people who are willing to be wooed by the conservative wing of the Republican Party.
But I have to assume that this, and, you know, it's pretty clear that, you know, this is one of those amazing examples where the Democratic Party has really dropped the ball in terms of having values or just beliefs or unity enough to hold on to the people that they used to claim to represent the most.
Three words, Mark. Taken for granted. People of the black Democrats have been warning for a long time that the party risked disaster if it continued to just simply believe that because people were black, they were automatically Democrats. And now we're starting to see the Republicans saying, well, we're going to contest that, even though we don't have the numbers now. In 10, 15, 20 years, we will. And if we do, the Democrats will never win another election in our lifetime.
But, you know, it's like I still believe that as this administration, as Republicans, continue to bankrupt the country, you know, pull back all the bankruptcy, Social Security, restricting victims' rights, you know, as the Medicaid cuts go in, you know, that ultimately what the battle is going to be drawn on class issues. You know, that ultimately what's going to happen, it's not going to be black or white or Latino or anything else, is that the chasm between rich and poor in this country, you know, in the next 10 years is going to become so tremendous that, you know, I hope to God that the Democrats pull it together to reconnect with their core values, because they're going to need a certain amount of unity to rally all those people around them, as opposed to let them all die or go into faith-based initiative jobs that, you know, that enables them to think that they were being taken care of by the Republicans.
I got news for you.
What?
In the next few election cycles, you're going to see more and more black people running as conservatives. This guy in Michigan, Lynn Swann, the former football player, running for governor of Pennsylvania. You're going to see more and more of these conservatives trying to run, and that will draw blacks to the conservative wing of the Republican Party if Democrats aren't smart.
And we're losing the Latinos, too, and we're going to talk about that when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, fighting treason. This is Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
I'm Mark Maron. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning to our Latino Democrats who have not jumped ship yet. Good morning to you. I mean, there is some interesting stuff going on in the Hispanic community. One of the things that's most interesting to me, Riley, is that the National Council of La Raza has gotten behind Alberto Gonzalez. Now, I don't, you know, it's like I'm not great with this sort of, you know, figuring out, you know, how the sort of politics works within ethnic groups. But, you know, there's something going on. There's some sort of divide and conquer policy within ethnic communities that the Republicans are definitely engaged in. But this is a little weird to me, is that a lot of these people, you know, people who are immigrants or second generation immigrants from Central America who left regimes of torture and tyranny that were supported by the Americans are now here in this country, and some of them are actually supporting the new guy who's in charge of torturing and representing torture for this regime.
Well, here's what's going on in this specific instance, Mark. First of all, the National Council of La Raza is considered a, quote, left-leaning organization. Conservative commentators have made much money accusing La Raza itself of racism. Because La Raza, of course, in Spanish means the race.
Is it a civil rights group? It is, right?
Yes, it is.
It's been around since Cesar Chavez, right?
It's been around since, yeah, since around that, since the late 60s, early 70s. And what it is, it's also an umbrella organization of many different Latino advocacy groups across the country. Now, what's happened in this instance is the other night, first of all, we should say that La Raza broke with other civil rights organizations,
yeah,
both black and Latino, in supporting Gonzalez's appointment in the first place. And now, just the other night, Tuesday night, I believe, they had an award ceremony and dinner that Gonzalez showed up to, and the embrace became very, very public. Now, ask yourself, why would La Raza, a left-leaning organization, support a right-wing guy like Alberto Gonzalez? Because they, first of all, are trying to change their own image.
Right.
They're tired of being painted as this left-leaning, radical, racist organization.
But there was also a time in this country when, when these Latino communities that were seeking to be unionized were getting representation, you know, for the jobs that they were doing, where, you know, democratic principles and policy was important to them, and I felt that at that time, they probably felt very well represented. But I feel that now, you know, those issues are not the same as they used to be, and they're trying to get in cahoots with somebody in power so they can empower themselves.
Well, yeah, and not just in cahoots. What ends up happening here is that Latino organizations, in many instances, want to see a visible Latino face, quote, at the table. So that when the administration meets, when the cabinet meets, if something comes up that will impact negatively on the Latino community, they want a Latino to be sitting there to say, whoa, wait a minute, we can't do this because. And they see Alberto Gonzalez as being that person.
But how are they willing to dismiss what he stands for? How are they how are they able to dismiss that, you know, he represents the sort of, you know, the permissive torture that goes on in the world? How can they separate? Is their desire for access so deep that they are willing to dismiss him of these crimes against humanity in certain respects?
If there are certain things that they think they can get for it. Let me give you an example. We've been talking, actually, before we went on the air, about the fact that Bush has decided now, in the case of 51 Mexicans on death row, to comply with the International Court of Justice, the World Court, and grant these people either rehearings or new trials, ideally.
This is the last time, though, right?
Yeah, this is the last time.
That came out yesterday, but today it says this is it. They're not going to do this anymore, but you're saying that on some level, his last action was to reach out to the Mexican-American
community. And Gonzalez may get some credit for this, you see, for changing Bush's position on this.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean they're not going to kill him.
No, it doesn't mean they're not going to kill him. But let me give you another example. There is an initiative called Operation Compliance. Most people have no clue what it is. It was formed in December 2001 in response to the terror attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Its job was a federal task force whose job it was to arrest illegal immigrants in the states that they suspected of having ties to terrorist organizations. What it has ended up being has been a situation where they've arrested somewhere on the order of 1,100 people. The overwhelming majority of them are Latinos with no ties to terrorism whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if La Raza thinks that Alberto Gonzalez can get Operation Compliance to do its actual job, which is to go after terrorists, not to go after Latino day laborers,
mm-hmm,
that's a net plus for them. That's the kind of access that they think having Alberto and supporting Alberto Gonzalez will grant them to get these kinds of specific situations dealt with. And because Gonzalez, as Attorney General, heads the Department of Justice, Operation Compliance is in his hands.
So these people, like the one thing I'm realizing about people who are leaders, you know, the people who are leaders in the black community and the Latino community, is that they know that they can bring a certain number of people with them. That there are people that, you know, may not be thinking in the best interest of the community, but thinking in the best interest of the politics of who they represent. It doesn't mean necessarily the same thing, does it?
It doesn't necessarily mean the same thing, but in the instance of a situation where there are people on death row or whatever, getting somebody to rethink a policy like that, they feel is a plus for the community.
Now, let's go. Also, I wanted to bring this up, because maybe you can explain this to me. The Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, of which La Raza is a member, is not supporting Gonzalez.
Henderson, yeah. Henderson is the president of the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, I've served on a couple of panels with him, as a matter of fact.
So it doesn't go up that high?
It doesn't go up, no. And the Leadership Conference of Civil Rights is itself an umbrella organization,
right,
of civil rights. And La Raza also is an umbrella organization of different Latino advocacy groups. And what Wade Henderson said is, look, we don't tell our member organizations how to do this. He's not down with it. I can tell you that right now. Wade Henderson, certainly as far as the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights is concerned, they're not going to be down with embracing Alberto Gonzalez. But they say they understand why the Latinos are.
And we got problems with the, now the Democratic Party has problems with the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, who are withholding party membership dues until they receive assurances from House Democratic leaders that the party will make a concerted effort to engage Hispanic voters and better serve the needs of the Hispanic community. Now, before we talk about this a little bit, I want to solicit some calls from people within the Hispanic community who feel that they have been disenfranchised from the Democratic Party and why. 866-303-2270. We'll be taking those calls over the break. But what are the implications of this, Mark Riley?
Well, see, this is a very... When you put these two things together, what you see is the Republicans reaching out to the Latino community, while the Democrats appear, at least to some Latinos, as being, you know, pulling their hand back from them. And this situation on Capitol Hill and with the Latino members of Congress has been a festering sore since the beginning of the Kerry campaign, and now it's just coming to the surface. We'll get into it and explain to people exactly what its dynamics are, because one does impact the other. Remember, Bush got an estimated 42% to 44% of the Latino vote. That is a very, very high percentage. When you consider back in 1976, Gerald Ford running against Jimmy Carter only got 18%.
They never broke 40%, you know, from, you know, 80, 84, 88, 92, 96, 2000, and they never broke 40%. I mean, Reagan got 37%. The second Reagan presidential campaign or election got 37%. 1988, H.W. Bush 30%. Bush 92, 24%. I mean, this is, you know, things are, it's really shifting, and it's pretty unnerving.
It's unnerving, but what it means is that this community has decided that they are not going to put all their eggs in one basket. The Latino vote increasingly is up for grabs, and a lot of that has to do, and a lot of the blame there has to be laid at the feet of the Democratic Party.
Oh, my God. You know, it's like between Max Cleland yesterday saying we got to pick our battles, and, you know, and then, you know, the slippage in our appeal, and I shouldn't say our, but the Democratic Party's appeal to minority communities that, you know, used to, you know, that used to really represent them is very it's scary to me, man.
Well, so, it's deep, yeah.
Yeah, so let's talk about it more, the Hispanic Caucus, when we come back. We're taking calls from Latinos, 866-303-2270. It's 15 past the hour. We'll be back in a second on Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
All right, 20 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. That's the Hives, right?
Nope.
All right, I just want to make sure I know that, because I know I have the album. I listened to it once. Maybe I should listen to it again. I get kind of snooty about stuff like that. I'm like, no, only Iggy and the Stooges can play music that sounds like that. All right, but that's me being kind of, you know, limited. But I like the Hives record. It's not what this is about. You know what it's about? I'm going to the therapist today. Here's my dream from last night. I'm at home in Queens, and somebody's leaning on my doorbell. I go to the door, and it's Jesus. He's all out of breath and says, Mark, let me in quick. I say, Jesus, what's going on, man? He sits on my couch and he says, don't tell anyone, but I thought I'd come back, set the world to rights, judge the quick from the dead, make the crooked straight and the rough places plain, all that, you know. And by the way, your buzzer doesn't work. I say, sorry, the super slow here. What can I do for you, Jesus? Jesus leans in and whispers, what happened to this place? I say, what do you mean? Jesus says, earth, man. Wow, you go away for a while and everything's gone in the crapper. I say, what do you mean, Jesus? He says, war, tsunamis, intolerance, the rich get richer, the poor get squat, people using my name to bully everybody else. I say, yeah, some of the people that claim to follow you really suck. He says, and what's with these white plugs everyone's got in their ears? I can't get anybody to answer a question in this freaking place. I say, yeah, Jesus, it's a drag. But what do you want me to do about it? He puts his arm around my shoulder and he says, hey, can I crash in your couch while I figure this out? The religious right finds out I'm back. Oh, man, forget about it. World War III, dude, no doubt. So I say, Jesus, so Jesus stayed on my couch for a long time, mostly just surfing through cable channels. He seemed to really like Inside the Actor's Studio. He wasn't in a lot of trouble. I just wish he'd kick in on the rent occasionally. Then all of a sudden, Jesus got off my couch, shaved, and enrolled at City College to study social work. One day he came home from class and I said, you know, it's great that you're going to school and all that, but you're Jesus. Shouldn't you have bigger goals? He shrugged and he says, well, you know, you got to start somewhere. Can you help me study for my trig midterm? I woke up and my bed was filled with the first buds of spring.
Wait a minute. You got to take trig to get a social work degree in this town?
Maybe it's an elective, you know what
oh,
I mean?
I
maybe
you,
he's just wanted to broaden it a little bit. It's a dream, right?
All right. I quibble.
All right, so we're talking, we're taking calls from Latinos.
And others.
And we're talking about, Hispanic Democratic, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus saying that they're not going to pay their dues because the Democratic Party is not representing their community's needs.
Well, this, again, goes back to the Kerry campaign when a number of Latinos felt that decisions were being made about their community without any Latino input whatsoever.
And also they felt that they were just being paid lip service. And, you know, maybe at the end of the segment I'll read some of the things that were being put into speeches, that there were some talking points that just weren't working. But let's take a couple of calls first, shall
yeah.
we? Marte in Savannah, Georgia, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
What's on my mind?
Yeah.
This is America. This is my country. I love it.
Yeah.
I was born in Panama Canal.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody born in Panama Canal before the year 1952 supposed to be an American.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
The immigration law changed so much. I have 5 children.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Not one of them is on welfare, thank God.
Okay.
All right. My son is a 2-time veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Navy and Marine.
Mm-hmm.
Prejudice Smith. In that made my son got a dishonorable discharge. Or other than honorable. My baby boy was in the last war year, Saudi Arabia, at the age of 19.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Okay.
They sent him to Korea.
Okay.
Prejudice, they left him out there 24 hours in the snow.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Martha, are you people from Jamaica?
No, my great ancestors are from the Congo.
From the Congo?
The Congo, Africa.
Okay.
And they dropped them in Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
And then they migrated to Panama and Costa Rica with the time of the malaria.
Your people built the canal, right?
That's right.
So how do you feel about, how do you feel about the Democratic Party, Marte?
I love the Democratic Party. I love the Republican Party because I want the right man to sit in office.
So
don't go by today the Democrat this, that, the other.
Okay.
I've been watching Voting Time from I was 5 years old, and I know what it's all about.
Okay.
All right.
And we all are a melting pot. We all migrated here. Only one nation did not migrate here was the Indians.
That's a very good point.
Thank you for your call, Marte.
It was the Indians. They're still on the reservation, and the black man ain't free.
Are you running?
But at the same time, I say, God bless America, because I live here.
Are you running?
This is my country.
Are you running for office?
No, I'm not. I'm running for Jesus.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Marte.
I'm running for Jesus.
Thank you, Marte.
Thank you, Marte. Thank you very much. All right. That was a nice speech, actually.
That was the best call I've ever heard. I didn't know where it was going, but you know, I was ready to stand up and applaud. There was a cadence, and I really appreciate her passion. His passion. I don't know.
I think that was her.
Yes, it was. Leanna in Atlanta. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey. Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm all right after that last call.
Woke you up,
hey,
didn't it?
What was that?
It woke you up, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Better than my coffee. It's better than the Starbucks. Listen, I live in Conyers, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
I was born and raised in New York City.
Okay.
I spent 30 years in New York, and then I left. And it's kind of strange living down here. A lot of Bible.
Sure.
Yeah, you know. And what I think about this Hispanic thing, I'm Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
And Democrat. And I think it has a little bit of the roots are in racism among the Hispanics, because I think that from what I've seen, Latinos tend to like to associate themselves with whites rather than blacks.
You mean Latinos with money?
Yeah, that too. I mean, even in my own family, like I have my father's light-skinned Puerto Rican, my mother's dark-skinned Puerto Rican, but outside of our family, a lot of Hispanics have a problem with that.
That's like, interesting, yeah. We're running out of time here on this segment, but it's an interesting point you bring up about...
It's something we could do for another show,
sure.
Because there is a lot of color consciousness within the Latino community, not just the Puerto Rican community, Dominican...
And also class distinction within within
And I think they want to associate themselves with the Republican Party because they're climbing the ladder.
That's right. That's right. That's a good point. Thanks for your call.
Thanks for the call.
You know, that's an interesting thing because about, you know, second generation, third generation immigrants have a resentment toward first generation immigrants that's deeper than any sort of contempt.
Yeah, it's called pulling up the ladder after you're on the boat.
Okay,
there you go. We got the Morning Sedition Radio Theater coming up. One of my favorite segments.
It's going to be fun.
Right here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
The Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of The Shadow Government.
When we last left Mark, he was in Los Angeles, where an actor who portrayed Osama bin Laden led him to a meeting of right-wing media power brokers chaired by Michael Powell. After crawling through a sewer, Mark kidnapped Powell and fled the scene.
Okay, Powell, get in your limo. I want to know where your father is. And stop staring at me like that. You look like Bush reading a thesaurus.
You're making a big mistake, Maron.
Driver, let's go.
And what is that smell?
I don't want to talk about it.
How do you get it off of gravy? It's exactly like cheerleading, people. 2, 4, 6, 8. All you Muslims masturbate. Pray for your life, Skid Mark. And Charles Crater, Mark the Shark salutes you. Oh, I'm sorry. It's about
this guy is hilarious.
He can't say things like that on the air. I like his politics, though.
I like Al Franken.
Who asked you, driver?
Michael Powell was finally taking me to see the guy I was hired to find. Colin Powell. He dropped me at an apartment in Encino, and I rang the bell. Colin Powell, you're tougher to find than bin Laden. Assuming Bush had actually looked for bin Laden instead of retasking translators and surveillance resources to Iraq and pulling the 10th Mountain Division out of Afghanistan, leaving only unreliable Afghan warlords of questionable loyalty to conduct the hunt at Tora Bora. But even given all that, he'd still be pretty tough to find. And I guess all I'm saying is, you're even tougher. God, I'm exhausted.
Come on in. You look terrible. What is that smell?
Well, I've been tortured by Alberto Gonzalez, attacked by Ronald Reagan's clone, tied down and left to be eaten by rats, chased and shot at, and crawled through a sewer to catch your son, but your wife hired me to find you, so here I am.
Mr. Marin?
Mrs. Powell?
Oh, dear, did I forget to fire you? Let me write you a check. Obviously, this case is closed.
Not exactly. I know about... the shadow government. I know about... the fake bin Laden. I know about the corporate media conspiracy. And that's pretty much all I know right now. All right, can the music. What I don't know is, why were you on the run in the first place, Powell?
This tape I smuggled out of the White House should explain everything.
He wants to turn himself in. It'll ruin everything. Keep him out of the country. He's our ace in the hole.
Yeah, remember when we used to call Hussein that? Finally had to pull him out of the hole.
Stop laughing.
Sorry, sir.
That's Bush and Cheney. They're not talking about Osama, are they?
That's why I ran. Bush would do anything to get his hands on this tape.
Wait. I may have an idea. Okay, now I lost it because the music distracted me. Enough with that, or I'll... Oh, for God's sakes.
Has Mark uncovered a dark secret of the shadow government? How will he prove it to the world? And is Mrs. Powell being played by the same actress as the last time she appeared in this series? It's been more than 2 months. How would you even know? Find out who knows what and why they know it And who'll find out about it? And what they're going to do when they find out. When we hear Mark say...
Stop it! I oughta...
That's next time on The Shadow Government. And tune in later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of Buck Rogers in An Egalitarian Century.
Marin, set the controls for the Andromeda Galaxy.
Riley, set a course for Sirius, the Dog Star.
Have those controls been set to the Andromeda Galaxy?
Wait a minute, I'm the captain of the ship.
Oh, no you're not.
Guys, this is your producer. If you don't stop arguing, we're going to crash into the sun.
And I suppose you're in charge now.
Let's dialogue about this.
The sun, we're headed right for it.
Ah! Ah!
Hey, Kalo, cue up the crash sound effect and standby announcer.
I think we should negotiate terms of limited shared authority.
Agreed, but first we'll form a committee to research models of confederation.
That's coming up later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
The Larson Scream, I think, the highlight of that Morning Sedition Radio Theater. Am I wrong? 38 past the hour, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
You.
Larson Scream was great. Clutch Larson. Ah! Ah! I'm sorry, but I love the scream. I love it. He's talking to me in my head. He said, like, it wasn't on purpose. Yeah, like that. No, it was great. It was genius. The whole thing was great. I wish I hadn't eaten a gummy thing. Hey, let me swallow it. Okay, Riley.
Yes.
So this finally an amendment snags the bankruptcy bill from going through. Now, can you explain it to me? Who is it, Patrick Leahy?
Yeah, Patrick Leahy, Paul Sarbanes, and John Warner. And it's interesting because this is probably one of the more unlikely amendments that people would have thought might snag it. Now, this doesn't mean that the bankruptcy bill is not going to pass. It will likely come to a vote today, and it will probably pass. But the reason why it didn't pass yesterday, when it probably could have passed, is because this amendment, which would prohibit an investment bank that advises a company before bankruptcy from continuing to advise it after the company is in bankruptcy. And the thing that made the Republicans on the Senate floor nervous was that the House leadership had not given them the okay on whether the House would pass this with the amendment attached. Remember, the House has been saying all along, we want an amendment-free bill, and we'll pass it in a heartbeat, although they say it's not going to pass even the House until next month.
Wow. So now, what does this amendment imply? I mean, you know, does it outside of the entire bankruptcy bill being the worst thing ever, one of them.
Yeah.
What is this amendment? Why would they be snagged on that amendment, Riley?
Well, the snag really is on the Republican side of the aisle, because they have essentially told the House leadership, we will deliver to you an amendment-free bankruptcy bill. Now, what's happening here, and it's interesting because Warner, who's a Republican from Virginia, who's one of the sponsors of this amendment, what they're saying essentially is that an investment bank that advises a company both before and during bankruptcy is a clear conflict of interest, which it probably is. But the reasoning, I think, on the part of the Republicans in the Senate is procedural. They promised something, they want to deliver on it, and that is an amendment-free bankruptcy.
Now, hilarious. Leave it up to the Republicans. The one amendment that actually snags a process is worrying about investment banks. You know what I mean? That's their big concern.
Well, that one snagged it. Now, remember, they voted down one that would have given more protection to single mothers filing for bankruptcy. So we know that, you know, investment banks, that can snag it.
Exactly.
Help for single mothers, forget about it.
Help for single mothers, how about help for people that, you know, were just having the debt and how much they owe on the credit card bill itself? How about, you know, help for people that have been compromised by, you know, health problems? I mean,
as caregiver for someone who's very ill.
Any human issue around this bill, which it should be all of them, you know, to not give the people, and the whole myth of bankruptcy being caused by, you know, fiscal irresponsibility on behalf of individuals being ridiculous in itself. 9 out of 10 bankruptcies are because of prolonged medical problems. Even these are insured people that get dropped by their insurance, and the insurance does not provide them enough money to pay for their sicknesses, divorce, all right, you know, prolonged loss of job, you know. But the one thing that snags these guys is like, wait, are we treating investment banks fairly? I mean, let me get this straight, you know?
No,
but it's not
even
an ideological problem, as you're saying.
No, and see, now, remember that once this thing does pass, once it's signed into law by President Bush, you're going to have people in this country who are going to have to make the following choice. Do I pay the copay on my meds, which I might need to keep breathing, or do I pay this $100 or whatever it is in you know, in a bankruptcy situation, because now I can't declare Chapter 11 any Chapter 7, I'm sorry, anymore. I can only declare Chapter 13 because I make a little bit too much money.
Yeah.
I make maybe $500 more than the state median. Therefore, I have to declare Chapter 13. And now I've got to make the choice between my meds and paying off this bankruptcy beef.
Yeah, choose how quickly you want to die. That's it. Adapt or die. What happens to all these disenfranchised people that are going to be showing up in the next few years? What happens to them, Riley?
I don't know.
I read a piece, someone put it brilliantly. It said that this bill is going to make the bankruptcy courts just collection agencies for credit card companies.
That's exactly what it's going to do. And see, you know, the classist nature of this bill, because in addition to some of the other things we talked about that were amendments that were rejected, any attempt to make the very rich pay their fair share under the bankruptcy. Asset protection? Oh, no. We can't tamper with that. Nor could we tamper with, and this was an amendment, that would have made it harder to protect really expensive homes from creditors. In other words, just a little bit of a nick in that asset protection. Because these guys, see, the wealthier you are, the easier it is for you to scam the system, whether it's bankruptcy or anything else for that.
Yeah, apparently the Amex Super Special Triple Blue Card actually enables you to put money into protected assets.
Yeah.
It's right on the bill. It says if you want to protect up to $3 million, we can do that for you. Just send it to the Amex. Yeah, and
put it in the name of your kids.
Yeah, I don't know. I just got an application for that card. You know, they send you stuff like that for incentive. I'm clearly not making that much money.
By the way, you know, I just got one of those things in the mail. Just yesterday, you have been pre-approved for some gold card, and you know what? You know what? One of the perks.
Doesn't it feel good to be pre-approved?
Yeah, until you read the fine print, and until you read that one of the perks is the prestige of having the card. Excuse me? I didn't ask you to send me this, and now I'm supposed to sign it and return it because I will feel more prestigious carrying your card. Until, of course, I don't make the first payment, and then there's a problem. This is an incredible thing that's going on here. Now, you know, without getting into my credit worthiness, there was a time that the idea that a credit card company would send me anything would have been seen as, because I was deep into the cash economy.
I was such an idiot. You know, I personalize too many things, you know, in terms of like.
You don't personalize enough things.
Is that true?
Yeah, right. True.
I take things personally. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. Like, I remember there's this time where when I first got a credit card that I thought if I didn't pay on time, there was literally somebody there at the credit card agency going, why hasn't Marin called or anything? I don't understand what, like, I literally pictured a person, like, if I saw that I was, like, you know, like 3 or 4 days overdue, that there was some guy just going, oh, my God, I'm starting to sweat. Is he going to pay it or what? You know, I'm just ridiculously stupid sometimes.
But you know what happens? They found a way to get around that. It's called the late fee. Now they don't have to call anymore. They just charge you an extra 20, 25, 50 bucks. They make out like bandits. They get billions a year, by the way, in late fees from people who apparently can barely afford to pay. Now, we should say, in fairness, and you know, Luther Gatling, who we had on earlier this week, said he has never seen someone coming out of a bankruptcy hearing with a smile on their face. This is, you know, the idea that maybe 3 to 10% of the people who get credit cards are actually trying to scam the system. And you know, this creates the crisis that the credit card companies have spent 8 years trying to get amended.
Well, they try to blame people that, you know, that are really sort of a minimal amount. It's like the malpractice suit, too, thing. That
malpractice is, and Social Security, which we'll talk
that
about.
These are, you know, that these are lawyers, you know, gutting the system. You know, these are, what do they call, frivolous lawsuits.
Frivolous lawsuits.
It's only 2%.
It's crippling the system.
And the Social Security crisis, which now they're having to change. I hope that people are aware that these people are literally trying to rewrite a sales pitch for something that is not sellable because it sucks. Can I just say one thing with not being provoked at all? These Welch's fruit snacks.
He just killed a whole thing of them.
Tremendous.
Tremendous. A whole pouch.
So, and I'm not even working for Welch's, but I'm just telling you, I had a good time with them. They had that nice flavor and that squishy but resistant gummy kind of thing going on.
You know, you can buy 6 packs full. My daughter likes them.
God.
You can buy packs of them.
I'm going now. We're going to talk to Social Security. We're going to talk to Social Security. How about it? We're going to talk to the point. You know what? We'll be back at 47 past the hour, Air America.
You're listening to Morning's Edition.
The highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
651 past the hour. Mark Mariner with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Sarah America Radio. Hey, you guys out there. What do Altered States, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Catch 22, Midnight Cowboy, Gosford Park, Ghost World, Best in Show, Waiting for Gus Guffman, Deconstructing Harry, Clock Watchers, Bob Roberts, Absence of Malice, Mighty Wind. What do they all have in common? Bob Balaban is going to be with us in the next hour.
That guy.
Who's that guy? That's that guy again. Bob Balaban. Director, writer, producer, jack of all trades, author of children's books. He's the guy. I don't know where he gets the time. I'm looking forward to talking to him because he's one of the funniest actors out there. And he's also involved with some pretty interesting stuff. But this is great. Here's a good story. You remember that USA Next, that ad that they had on, what was the American Prospect?
American Spectator.
I always confuse them. They're very different.
Spectator, bad.
Yeah.
Prospect,
exactly.
Good.
So in the American Spectator, they had the ad about the retirement, the AARP. They had the two gay men kissing each other. Well, it looked like a wedding ceremony. And then they had the soldier. It said, you know, with the X in it and the check on the gay guys.
Men, yeah.
Well, those two gay guys are suing, and it looks like this case has got some teeth, Riley.
$25 million lawsuit, and nobody's calling it frivolous.
That's right. Jarvis, the guy, what's his name, the head guy?
Charlie Jarvis from USA Next.
Said he subcontracted this job to get the picture, and apparently nobody asked for permission to run the picture, and they have no recourse.
There's truly no honor among thieves. What Charlie Jarvis did was blame the agency that apparently created the ad, who he hired, by the way.
Right.
Said, well, they're supposed to clear all this. Man, you know, this sounds more and more like modern organized crime in terms of just people willing to flip on each other in a heartbeat. And Jarvis is saying, well, they should be upset with the left-wing blog that posted all this stuff. That was the genius of it.
He puts it off on the person that was hired to get the image. That guy did not ask the Portland Tribune. For the image or permission to use the image. And then after he ran the ad, he wrote them a letter asking permission to use a similar image. And then after the ad ran, he wrote a letter that said, look, you know, I'm sorry I didn't quite get the okay to use that image.
Yeah.
You know, but none of that, you know, is going to cover the tracks. And then Charlie Jarvis has the nerve to say they ought to be suing all the left-wing blogs for circulating this ad. These guys have no integrity, scruples, or character whatsoever. They are just, you know, vultures, predatory feeders, people that don't care about anything. That's who these guys are, and that's who this administration hires to work for them.
Let's look at exactly what Rick Raymond and Steve Hansen, the two guys involved here, exactly what they think happened to them. Because I think this is important for people to understand. They were portrayed, in their own words, as treasonous, unpatriotic, and a threat to American troops because of the contrast of having a soldier next to them and saying that the AARP did not want to support soldiers, but they did support these two homosexuals who are kissing in the picture. They are saying that USA Next and this particular ad agency, Mark Montini International, boy, he shares our name, Marin. The scary thing. Anyway, they say that they invaded the privacy, violated their rights to control their own images, libeled them, and intentionally inflicted emotional distress. It sounds like 25 mil to me, Mark Marin.
Oh, at least. No, I mean, that the most, actually. They'll probably have to settle out of court, or they'll probably cut a settlement, but this case has got real teeth. I love it.
Yeah.
And, you know, these guys will stop at nothing, this American Next and the people that slander. You know, the same guys who did the Swift Books or Truth ad did that other ad that you hear on some of those right-wing stations. We got a copy of it. Why don't we listen to it?
The American Association of Retired Persons is opposing President Bush's plans for Social Security. Why would they do that? If you want to know the truth about old people, talk to the people who know them.
Old people are needy. I need a ride. I need a walker. I need something to eat. Could somebody please help me? I'm in the toilet. I can't get out. It's horrendous.
I had to spend 15 minutes helping my mother find her glasses because she forgot where she put them. Just forgot.
Dude, they crap in their pants.
Enough about World War II. I get it. You were there.
I'm sorry, but if you're going to dinner at 4 o'clock, you really don't need more money.
You liberated Auschwitz. You were there. I understand. Can we watch The Apprentice now?
And when they wear those diapers, they can pee right on themselves, too. Just pee.
Brian! My name is Brian! God!
I remember this one time, my uncle, he was on the floor. I thought he was having a heart attack or he's dead or something. Turns out he wasn't. Just on the floor.
Who the hell is Bobby? Nobody knows Bobby!
Dude, they crap their pants.
Old people. They oppose President Bush's plans for Social Security. Isn't it time they died already?
Paid for by Swift Boat Veterans for whatever cause is being funded by the right-wing millionaires at the moment.
So, it's just horrendous the levels those guys will stoop to. Do you know what I mean? To slander people, you know, retiring people. It's 57 past the hour. Now, when we come back after this break, are we going to talk about the General Accountability Office?
We're going to talk about the C word.
Mm-hmm.
That's C for crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Because GAO says Social Security doesn't have one.
And we're also going to talk to Brendan, who's in Kentucky.
Is yes.
it Kentucky? He's going to be on the phone with us from the actual event where Bush is there with his Screw the Future revival show.
Yeah, right. The Magical Mystery Tour.
Oh, yeah.
When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Welcome aboard, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Have you seen the movie Altered States, Close Encounters, Catch-22, Midnight Cowboy, Gosford Park, Ghost World, Best in Show, Mighty Wind, Waiting for Guffman, Cradle Will Rock, Deconstructing Harry? Have you seen those movies? Absence of Malice. Have you seen those? Bob Roberts. Huh? Have you seen him? Because Bob Balaban, the guy who's that guy in all those movies, you know, hey, there's that guy again, is going to be that guy right here sitting with us talking to us about his new play that he's in, the David Mamet play that's on Broadway now, and also about some of the other things he's working on in his involvement with that movie, The Exonerated, who we talked to the producers about people on death row who may be not guilty. Looking forward to it. I've been a big fan of his for years. It's going to be one of those situations, Riley, where I'm like, oh, no, I'm a fan, and this is going to be, I hope I don't act like a fan.
Sure.
Is it okay?
You know you will.
Come on. I've been pretty good.
Don't worry about it.
All right. Hey, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying, so I just, we got ourselves here in the studio, and I hope none of the other shows are using this. The brand-new iNews 5000 Wi-Fi Headline Translator. Look at that thing shine. It's time now to feed it some headlines. From the New York Times, new interrogation rules set for detainees in Iraq. New interrogation rules set for detainees in Iraq. Translation, prison fashion mavens say hoods optional for spring. Yes. From Fox News, 50 Cent, the game, call a truce. 50 Cent, the game, call a truce. Translation, rappers agree to get rich rather than die trying. Yes. From the Associated Press, teen sends student semen-frosted brownies. Teen sends student semen-frosted brownies. Translation, producers find writer for American Pie 4. All right. So Riley, let's get into this. The changing of the language, this still seems to amaze me, is that, you know, Bush, in a very public way, and thank God for the press on this level, if you're not sure about Social Security, you can read reports almost daily coming out from news outlets that say that they are trying their best to rephrase, reframe, redo, hammer out, refresh their pitch of something that they're having a hard time selling, which means what? After a certain point, the product sucks! Wake up! What about the General Accountability Office there, Riley?
Well, the GAO, the head of the GAO, David Walker, testified before the House Ways and Means Committee the other day. And the testimony began the debate over Bush's plan to overhaul, or let's put it bluntly, privatize Social Security.
To casinoize Social Security. Do you want to have guaranteed money, or would you like to put your number, your money on number five?
There you
Yay,
go.
Yay, five. Is it going to...
Not that one. What David Walker said was Social Security, quote, does not face an immediate crisis. It does face a long-term financing problem, but that's not the same as an immediate crisis. And what's interesting about this is at the same time Walker is saying there's no crisis, Republicans are starting to realize that Americans are reacting negatively to the word crisis.
Of course.
Bush's framing of this as a crisis is not resonating with the public.
Right.
And in particular, older people who Bush has reassured over and over, there'll be no cuts in benefits. There are no cuts in benefits. A lot of older people don't believe that snake oil either.
Yeah, they don't. No, I mean, crisis, I mean, I understand that word. If I was told that something is in crisis, I mean, it would create an immediate fear reaction. But then when you're saying something's in crisis, we want to take your money later, you know, then it's sort of like, well, wait a minute, Dave, what do you think, I'm stupid?
Yeah. Democrats in the House, specifically Charles Rangel, who is the ranking Democrat on the House Ways and Means Committee, have thrown down the gauntlet. They've drawn the line in the sand. Charles Rangel says, quoting here, private accounts will not be on the table if you're looking for bipartisanship. Now, it may well be that they can pass this thing through the House on a straight party line vote. I don't think so. I don't think that all of the Republicans are going to stay on the ranch on this one. What Charles Rangel is saying is all of the Democrats will stay on the ranch, that maybe it'll have trouble getting out of committee if they don't find some way to take the private accounts off the table.
This is one of those battles that Max Cleland thinks is worth fighting. You know, this sort of pick your battles idea, obviously this is worth fighting for, but so is bankruptcy, all right? So is restricting victims' rights. I just don't think on some level that the Democrats have anything to lose by grouping together and fighting all of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, see, it's interesting because the Republicans use everything that's at their disposal. According to the story from the Associated Press, new Republican polling data shows there is a rejection of the term crisis as an accurate description of the state of the Social Security system, and this rejection increases in intensity as respondents get older. What that means to politicians is, because older people tend to vote in higher numbers than younger people do, that older people, if they reject the term crisis, that could mean that they will put Republicans out of office if they continue to try and frame it that way. Because the bottom line is, those for older people do vote, and they vote their interests.
This would also explain the weird renewal of the draft of retired people into the armed forces.
Oh, Lord. Not bad.
The infantry. Now, you know, it's interesting because, you know, the people who vote against things, like, you know, people like Joe Biden and the guys that, you know, are hosed for the credit card companies, you know, they can't, there's no excuse for, you know, for all Democrats to vote against this. And I think you're right, because as you said, constituents of retirement age and even younger people, they said they're getting a little success in scaring the hell out of some people a little younger than me.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think that's ridiculous too, because, you know, the last thing any of these kids are thinking about is their retirement. And to say that, like, you know, to try and sell them on the bill of goods of, you know, you can really make a lot of money if you stash a little bit of it away. I hope this thing dies, Riley.
Well, you know, what's interesting, too, is that David Walker, and this is particularly interesting because, you know, the GAO is a nonpartisan organization. But you know what? He criticized Bush for going out on that magical mystery tour he's on, the 60 places in 60 days.
The Screw the Future revival show?
Yeah, that's the one. And see, the other thing that's interesting here, and remember now, folks, you heard it here on Morning Sedition first. You heard that the term crisis is now a no-no in describing the situation with Social Security. You've also heard that calling them private accounts doesn't work well among focus groups that Republicans have put together. Well, get ready for... You ready for this, Mark?
Yeah, what do you got? So wait, hold on. I'll give you a drum roll. I think I will. Do I have one?
Yeah, you got one there?
Yeah, I do. I just...
There you go. Personal retirement account.
Oh.
That works better. Even seniors, when they're given a written description of Bush's plan, and when it is described as a personal retirement account as opposed to a private account, they react better. So that's how they're going to frame it. You watch.
But are people just stupid animals? Like, it's like, oh, private, oh, personal retirement account. Ooh, that sounds better.
Let me tell you something.
Shiny thing.
Let me tell you something about people who do this kind of work. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking now about pollsters and research people and that sort of thing.
And advertising.
Advertising people, yeah. Well, the first thing that, you know what they'll tell you? I know you better than you know yourself.
You do?
Yes.
Wow.
Because I know how you're going to react to certain stimuli, even if you're not aware of it.
Really? Is it happening now?
It's happening as we speak.
Oh.
It happens each and every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And
they will
better.
Tell you that they study the data. They study the data that
right.
involves 40-something white males. They've established a data 50-something black males.
And
that's me and you.
They do that thing. Here's some things you might not
know about
you.
Yourself. Yeah, exactly. And this is how they're framing this debate. It's not that people are stupid.
Yeah.
It's that these folks...
They're easily led.
Well, no. what it means is they are easily manipulated.
Okay.
Extremely easily manipulated.
Well, we're going to talk to Brendan P.W. McDonald, who's out on the road in Kentucky with the president.
Yeah.
He's not with him, obviously, but he's going to be doing the entire Screw the Future Revival Hour with the president on the road. He's in Kentucky. We're going to hear from him on the phone after we take this break. It's 15 past the hour on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
As many of you know, today President Bush is starting a two-day leg of the Screw Social Security Tour. He's got a batch of gigs between today and tomorrow. He'll be in Shreveport, Louisiana tomorrow and in Memphis, where we've got a lot of listeners who hear us on WWTQ 680 AM, and they're holding a protest tomorrow. It's going to be at the High Point Pinch parking lot at 111 Jackson, north of the Cannon Center, tomorrow, starting at 7 AM. Go to MidSouthPeace.org for more information. But first, today he's going to be in Louisville, Kentucky, the president is, Riley, and Montgomery, Alabama. He's actually already in Louisville. And after touching down at Louisville International Airport, our own Brendan P.W. McDonald is on the scene at the Kentucky Center for the Arts, awaiting the arrival and reporting for us from there. Brendan, can you hear me?
Yes, Mark. How are you? I can hear you fine.
Oh, good, man. Well, what's going on down there?
It is freezing cold here. I thought going south was going to help me out a little with the cold weather we got in New York, but
yeah.
I don't know, I guess being right on the Ohio River here, it's still very cold. I actually thought of ducking into the Louisville Science Center just a few blocks from here, but I knew there would be no way I could get a chance to see President Bush because, you know, he won't go anywhere near a science center.
Yeah. Right. Well, you're doing the big work in the cold out there, PW. Are you seeing, what's going on? Are you seeing anything? Is there anything you can tell us so far?
I guess as you can hear behind me, there's a lot of people in here, Mark.
They're probably those hand-picked people,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Only pre-approved Americans. The last year, President Bush
yeah.
can tell how he wants to hand over billions of American retirement dollars to Wall Street brokers.
Do these people even realize that he wants to, like, reduce the guaranteed benefits for America's old people? I mean, many of these people only make, they get 100% of their money from Social Security.
Well, Mark, you know, as far as I can tell, these are pro-Bush ralliers
right.
that are here, and they're not only aware of that, they're in favor of that. You can hear some of the people right behind me, a bunch of yahoos are chanting, hey, hey, ho, ho, Social Security's got to go.
Oh, my God. That's ridiculous. It's horrendous. They want to take food out of people's mouths, for God's sake.
Yeah, worse than that, Mark.
Yeah.
They know that it's a reality of this plan, that they could not only reduce the quality of life in people's retirement, but they'd actually make the retirement shorter by forcing them to cut back on medicine and other essentials.
Yeah, like food. You know, of course, the flip side is that they're going to die sooner, so that helps Social Security save money. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, we joke about that, Mark, but being here, it's not so funny because it actually looks like these people, I mean, they've got real intense looks in their eyes, almost violent. It almost seems like they're advocating like a way to kill people with deadly policies.
Wow. Well, I don't know if they actually want to kill people. It's
I actually see something here. I want to kind of describe it for people because I'm not quite sure what to make of it either. There's a commotion down by the stage area because
really?
This big thing is being lowered down. So I want to wait and see what actually is coming.
What
yeah,
is
I
it?
See it now. It's kind of like a platform
uh-huh.
with people on it. They look like big old people
mm-hmm.
on there. I can't really tell what. Well, I definitely look to see one guy coughing. They look like sick old people
wow.
on there. They're probably just a dozen or so people supposed to symbolize America's elderly, from what I can tell.
Huh.
There's a big length of rope next to him. That guy is a stagehand, I guess. He's grabbing it, and I don't. Can't really tell what that is. He's got in his hand. It's like a torch or something.
Huh.
But I don't really know. Well, it has. It's first in the face. It's first in the face. Get out of the way. I don't understand what's going on over there. Get the fuck in the face. It's burning. It's burning. Terrible. Oh, my
get out of the way!
What's happening?
Mark! Mark, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, my God! Republicans are burning old people! They're bursting into flames, and their social safety net is falling on the mooring lines! All the folks between! This is terrible! This is the worst of the worst policy catastrophes in the world! Oh, wow! Billions and trillions of dollars is terrible destruction, ladies and gentlemen! America's old people are bursting into flames, and now they're finally crashing to the ground. Might they pass the mooring boat?
Oh, my God.
Oh, the humanity. Oh, no, the Republicans are cheering around here. I can't talk
to
these people. Their parents are on there. I can't talk. My home, ladies and gentlemen, honest. It's just lying there, massive smoking wreckage, and everybody can hardly afford to retire.
Yeah,
oh, lady.
Right?
Lady, I'm sorry. I can't talk. I'm going to step inside where I cannot see this.
Wow. Oh my God. Brendan? Wow. I hope he's okay, Riley.
Let's hope.
Because he's, we should turn on the TV and see what the hell is going on down there. Can we get a TV on here?
I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait till after the show. This guy, maybe Pashman's going to bring us something on it. But hopefully, Brendan's okay down there. Okay enough to, show up in Memphis tomorrow, at least. And some of you other people should, too, because there is a protest tomorrow in Memphis. So all you people listening to WWTQ680 AM in Memphis, get out to the High Point Pinch parking lot at 111 Jackson, north of the Cannon Center, tomorrow at 7 a.m. Hopefully Brendan will be there as well. Or you could go to MidSouthPeace.org for more information on that. Wow, that was some pretty heavy stuff there, Riley.
Intense.
So I talked to my, my mom. It's weird. My mom down in Florida, who, of course, yesterday, said something to aggravate me.
What'd she do? What'd she say now?
Listen to this.
She didn't call you fat again.
Mark, no. She goes, Mark, I tell my friends to listen to the show, and they tell me they don't understand it. They tell me they don't know what you're talking about. And I told her I was going to go do some comedy, and I think it's good because people are hearing me on the radio. She's like, but your comedy's not like the radio. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, it's different. I'm like, hey, how about you just say, tell me to be insecure. Why don't you just tell me that? Let's cut to the chase here. Tell me that I'm not good enough. Could you do that? So, Riley,
yeah.
I don't want them to touch my Social Security. I have a feeling I might need it.
I know I'm going to need mine. Look, all Americans need their Social Security. They paid into the system. And quite frankly, I'm getting tired of people acting as though, the current baby boom retirees, when we get to that, that age.
You and I are both under. It's going to affect us.
It is going to affect us. And see what.
But it's not going to go through.
The inference in all this is that we are somehow slackers, that we're going to suck up all the benefits that should be going to somebody else. I don't know about you, Mark, man, but I've been paying into Social Security since I was about maybe 15 years old.
I'm willing to pay a little more. I'm willing to let him put the tax up.
Well, I paid
a
lot now.
I know.
They always manage to take stuff and, let's say for the sake of argument that something is $1 billion in 2005 dollars, right? They always go back to 1981 dollars and say it's $5 zillion, right? Well, how much is my contribution from the late 60s, early 70s, how much is that in 2005 dollars?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. Why doesn't it grow like that?
Yeah.
It should.
Why shouldn't it?
Yeah. So we're going to have Bob Balaban when we come back. I'm nervous and excited.
Me too.
Yeah, he's a very funny guy.
Stay with us. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Are you getting...
past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
The program is Morning Sedition. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Bob Balaban, who you'll recognize from every movie ever made in the last 30 years, 20 years, many. But right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives there. So now on the phone, once again, is Planet Bush correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got his bags packed. Destination,
Glory.
Okay, buddy, that's great.
Glory.
Yes, I know. Okay, okay.
Mark, one little thing. Yeah. I'm not a correspondent anymore.
Oh, really? Is that true?
Yeah, Larson promoted me to Planet Bush Bureau Chief on account of all the fine work I've done on the program.
Well, that's great.
I'm very proud of
you. Well, congratulations, Watson. So I hear you're going on vacation next week.
Yes, Mark. I like to expand my mind
uh-huh.
and explore strange folk ways and customs.
Oh.
Well, that's why I come on this show.
Okay.
Little joke. Oh, starting Friday, y'all can vote on your favorite Planet Bush reports at morningsedition.com. And Clutch Larson will play those while you're gone.
This
right here on the radio.
This is so weird, you being like official bureau chief. So now where?
I'm official, buddy.
I know, buddy. Where are you going to be going on your
I'm
vacation?
I'm going to the Caribbean, Mark.
Uh huh.
A resort, you know, called Sandals or Sneakers or Bunions, something like that. It's one of those all-inclusive deals. You pay one fee and then they just start bringing you stuff.
Okay. So what are you going to do down there?
I'm going to lie around a swimming pool and drink frozen daiquiris and then golf and then. The all-you-can-eat buffet.
Hey, well, you know, you can do that at home, I think, can't you?
I know. Isn't it fantastic? In George W. two-terms mandate Bush
all
vision,
right. Yeah.
You'll be able to go anywhere in the world and sit by a swimming pool and have nice black people bring you unlimited quantities of frozen fruit-flavored alcohol.
Now, hey, look.
Look,
how are you supposed to learn about a culture that way?
Well, I have a system,
uh-huh.
Mark.
Yeah.
I turn on my iPod, put on some dark sunglasses, and then observe the wait staff
uh-huh.
while they serve fuzzy navels to white tourists from South Dakota.
Yeah.
About 15 minutes of that or so, and I feel I've got a really good handle on what the local culture's all about.
Come on.
I'm practically naked.
That's crazy.
After a half hour.
Come on. Don't you think that those resorts kill the local culture?
That's
Isn't it just another form of colonialism, Lawton? Come on.
Kill it?
Yeah.
Mark,
yes.
Americans go to these godforsaken wild places full of trees and nature and wildlife
uh-huh.
and all that stuff, and transform them into a place where Americans can comfortably spend their leisure time with each other without feeling like savages. Colonialism, the word you're looking for, my friend, is progress.
I'm getting pretty good at reading you, Lawton. Listen to me. I got a feeling that you're hiding something. I think that you went to the Caribbean when you were, what, 8 or 9? Am I right?
No, you're wrong.
No, I'm not.
You're wrong.
I talked to your family.
Sandals.
You had the best summer of your whole life there. Come on, buddy. Oh, there. See,
no,
there.
No.
Yes, I knew it.
No.
And it was beautiful and unspoiled, and you never had that much fun since then. So now you pretend like you don't want to be there anymore.
They braided my hair into cornrows.
Uh-huh.
Me and the Jamaican kids used to play on the beach and
uh-huh.
guava jelly and cigarette cakes.
There you go. Let it out. Let it out, buddy.
Oh, no. Oh, my nose.
That's it. I don't
I remember when
No, sir. Please stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Lawton, pull it together. Pull it together. Pull it together.
No cry.
Oh, God.
No,
just stop singing.
No cry.
You all right? You all right? Uh-huh.
What do you have against golf?
Okay. Yeah.
You know, green grass,
right.
Fresh air,
yeah.
High fees keep out the rips.
All right. Goodbye, Lawton. Goodbye. That's
all
enough.
Right.
That's
it. Yeah, I love you. Deal with it.
All right.
That's a little joke.
All right.
I will see you in a week.
You take care of yourself.
All righty.
Right now, thank you, Lawton, by the way. Right now, it's my pleasure to have on our program. You may have seen him in Altered States, Close Encounters, Catch 22, Midnight Cowboy, Gosford Park, Ghost World, Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman. He's also in the current David Mamet play called Romance, which is on now. And he's also just finished a children's book called Nick Rowell, which is available now. Bob Balvin, good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Good morning. Thank
Hello.
You so much for being with us.
Well, hi, Mark. It's good to be here.
True renaissance, man. Where do you get the time, Bob?
I'm busy, and I don't sleep that much, which is very helpful.
Just naturally, you really don't sleep that much?
Mm, yeah.
You want to come in here a couple times a week? We got to be here at 4.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of narcoleptic, so if you see me, it kind of doesn't matter if it's day or night. I just kind of go away.
So now, why don't we start with the play that you're in now? Are you working directly with David Mamet?
Well, directly and indirectly.
Is he directing it?
Not directly. Romance, which is at the Atlantic Theater Company, and we'll be there for another bit of time. It's a new play that David wrote that's a farce. It's the first time he ever wrote a farce.
And how's it?
I think it's very funny, and audiences seem to be reacting quite well. He didn't officially direct the play. The wonderful Neil Pepe, who runs the Atlantic Theater Company and directs many of their plays, directed it. And then David arrived a couple days before we started previewing and kind of did some tweaking. Well, did a few things to the script. In fact, every few days we get a little script thing here and there, uh-huh. which just kind of keeps you on your toes.
What's he like to work with?
Well, he's fantastic. I did Speed the Plow on Broadway a bunch of years ago. We replaced it in our cast. Replaced the Madonna cast.
Oh, right.
David came around. He's very, very... he's very interested in his plays. This is not somebody who just writes something and sends it out there and doesn't pay attention to it. He's a very diligent, hardworking person, funny though he is and can be. He's very, very serious. And he had great thoughts about his play. It was great that he came in when we were kind of up on our feet and very quickly did a few important tweaking things.
Well, he's got a unique approach to acting, doesn't he? He's got sort of very utilitarian acting.
Well, that's what he says.
Yeah.
And in his book, and, you know, I mean... I think David's approach is say the words, let's not talk about it now.
I don't care how you get to the emotion. I don't care what your process is.
Well, you know what?
Kind of thing?
It works well for his material, which doesn't mean that as an actor, you're not allowed to have secret private thoughts, which you don't talk about.
Right.
Which I have many of them all the time anyway, so that's very easy for me in this play.
Now, you play a prosecutor? In romance?
Yes, I do. I'm very prosecutorial.
Yeah. And, but a prosecutor with a little bit of a little personal life stuff going
well,
on.
Well, I'm gay in the play, but everybody is, as it turns out by the end of the play. The judge is gay. I think the only one we're not sure about is the defense, and that's only because we don't really pay attention to him at that point.
And that's what reveals itself during the play?
It kind of just slips out.
Now, how do you define, you know, maybe I'm stupid. What is a classic farce? What is the structure of a farce? Why is it, what is a farce per se?
You think I would know? I don't know.
I'm not,
you know, Mr. Drama.
I'm sorry.
A farce is funny.
Yeah.
It takes a realistic situation and pushes it to an extreme.
So farce way over the top.
Yeah, yeah. We get, this thing gets pretty crazy and it's fun. I guess you could say we base this, well, was Molière the father of farce? I don't know. You associate farces with slamming doors. We
do have a
couple of slamming doors.
Right.
And mostly it's heightened.
Right.
It's
heightened.
A comedy that's just pushed and pushed
exactly.
and pushed.
Pushed to the edge, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you are one of a relatively small number of people who does theater, I guess, on a regular basis after having done the film, you know, done Hollywood, done films and that sort of thing. Why do you maintain a continuing attraction to theater?
I like it, basically. And I don't that much because I'm sort of a multitasker. You know, I'm always developing things. I got a bunch of new TV series that are going to be on next year. Actually, I produced and directed and wrote a couple of pilots, three of which are happening right now. And all three of them actually will be picked up. So
wait a minute, you've
got
three
cool
different... You know, do you know how many people Marin would kill... to have one thing in development?
Yeah.
You have three at the
well,
same time?
I've been killing for a long time. You know, it took a while to get here.
He's been in every movie since 1975, I think. Haven't you, Bob?
Yeah, there are a few that I wasn't in.
Well, the interesting thing about you, because I've been a big fan for years, and I actually remember when after I saw Altered States, I think it was in high school, and then I saw Midnight Cowboy, you know, for the first time, and I'm like, oh my God, that's the guy, and that, you know, and that was the first movie role was in Midnight Cowboy, but it seems that you've evolved into. To doing a lot more comedy than you did early on.
Well, you know, it just kind of changes. I was very, very serious. Forgive me, I'm losing my voice. I was very serious for a long time. But I also studied at the Second City in high school when I was in Chicago, this wonderful place that turns out so many great people. Never appeared there, but studied there. And I guess I never kind of drew a line between if you were funny or you weren't funny. And these things kind of move in cycles. So when I got into the Christopher Guest things, that was like, oh, I guess you're sort of a funny person. And it's like, well, I could be serious. And fortunately, I'm fairly unclassifiable because, I mean, I'm not even really like an actor. I'm just this person who comes in, you know. Take me as you will.
I want to talk about your approach to comedy. I want to talk about your involvement with The Exonerated when we come back. We're having a conversation with Bob Balaban. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
All right, we're going to land this thing. It's 48 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Nope.
We're talking to a true Renaissance man, Bob Balaban, who's with us. There's so many things we need to talk about now. Just on the break, we're like, oh, we can talk about, and then we're going
I feel like when you say this Renaissance man, I feel like I should be wearing sort of cloth slippers and a kind of a felt hat with tassels on
and a lute in the background.
I would love to see you wearing that, actually. It would be hilarious. That was the thing we were talking about before is in playing comedy, that it, what I gathered from you and what you said is that you don't really differentiate. You just show up and play it straight.
Sort of. I think you sort of secretly have in mind that it might be good if it were actually funny. So could you do to move it into that area? Because you could also try very, very hard to make it not be funny and succeed. I mean, you might.
But some of the stuff you've been involved with, like the Christopher Guest films, I mean, how much of that is improvisation?
Well, they're all improvised. There is an outline Bible sort of thing, and in some cases it says, talk about this and kind of go there. And in other cases, it just says, the show is tonight, the three of you are together in the room.
And have you known those guys for years? So you guys work
together? Well, I have known them for years. The first one I did, well, there are three of these guys' movies, and I did Waiting for Guffman, I think, by now, 10 years ago. And then we did Best in Show a couple years later and A Mighty Wind a couple years ago. And I guess we're supposed to do another one at some point in maybe the end of the year.
These guys who work with us, so P.W. McDonald and Dan Pashman, they quote Waiting for Guffman. It's Dan Pashman's favorite movie ever.
I think they're all great, and I love Waiting for Guffman. And they're great people.
Let's, I have an 8-year-old daughter, and I told you on the break, and you have a series of children's books, the latest of which is coming out now, right?
Yes, they're called McGraw, and there are six in the series, and number six actually, I believe, comes out in March. Is this March?
Yes.
Well, it must be coming out now. And they're chapter books from Scholastic for kids, 8 to 12. You could be 7, and possibly you could be 16 and a little odd, but it's an adventure series, sort of comic adventures in a small town in America. Little boy and his best friend, a little girl, who end up with a bionic dog and who has superpowers, but they must hide the powers from the force of evil in the little town.
Ooh, there's always a force of evil in a little town.
There has to be. It was part of it. I got a letter after the third book from this wonderful little girl who said, "Dear Bob, I'm 10. I really like your books. They're funny and they're good. But I just finished number 3, and I'm a little disappointed in you, Bob."
Come on.
And I said, "Oh, what happened?" And she said, "Well, I kind of was reading these things, and then by number 3, I'm going, hey, it's the same thing over and over again."
And she caught on to it?
Yeah, she figured it out. They find the bad guys. It looks like the bad guys are going to win, and then the dog and his superpowers help everybody, and they always succeed at the end. Why does this have to be this way? And I wrote her back, and she said, "I'm a little afraid you're going to be mad at me, but I'd love to hear back from you." So I wrote her back immediately, and I said, "What a fantastic letter. You're 10, and you're already brave, and you're kind of willing to get out there." And I completely agree with you. It's very hard writing a series because you do have to observe the conventions of the series, and yet
did you use the word conventions with the
no general? Probably not. But she was very smart, and the first thing I figured out about these books is that you don't really want to overwhelm them or anything, but in no way do I go out of my way to not say certain things. The way I'm talking, there's not a lot of sex in these books. not particularly that I'm aware of, anyway. But you kind of just want to say whatever it is you want to say. And kids, they appreciate that because these are their first grown-up books, and they like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
What was the question?
The question was just
about McGraw. But it's funny because I'm not sure if my daughter doesn't already have one of them.
She might.
I think she might well, yeah.
Yeah, we sold a couple million copies, and they're out there at Scholastic fairs and clubs and in stores and things.
It wasn't a question. It was just like explaining the
narrative. Well, the little girl wrote the letter, and I wrote her back, and I said, "You're very brave, and thank you." And based on her letter, the last book in the series changed the formula. I got permission, and then I dedicated the book to her, and I said, "Thank you very, very much."
How did you change it? Exactly.
The bad guys never showed up. They looked like they were going to show up, and they're not dead, but they got amnesia and got put on a rocket and sent to an island, and they don't know who they are or where they are.
And do you continue that story in the next book? Well, or have you just introduced it to the kids that there is no closure in life?
It was, yes. Both. Well, we don't know. They were always intended to be six of these puppies, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
So we don't know if we're going to do more of them.
Oh, okay. All right.
At now, the moment, it's a unit of six, and it took 3 years, and I'm tired.
Now, you've been involved with a couple of media projects that have to do with justice and constitutional rights on some level. Mm-hmm. We had Jessica Blank and Eric Jensen in here who...
Yes, wonderful young people.
...created the Exonerated, yep. And you produced the film version of it.
Well, I produced and directed it as a play originally. We did it as a series of readings and stuff, and then got money together and made it into an actual play that actually ran for a couple of years. We had a national tour. Then I was able to place it with the brilliant Henry Schleif on the fantastic Court TV, which I really, really like a lot. And it was great for us to be on Court TV because this is a piece about wrongful conviction. And we did really go out of our way to say, look, let's forget about the death penalty for now. You can believe in it. You don't have to believe in it. It's a philosophy. We can talk about it forever. But in the meantime, look at how it's getting implemented, and let's talk about the fact that the justice system means very well and is flawed because life is flawed and people are flawed, and yet the death penalty is final, so you can't deal with flaws. And look at these six cases. So we got it up there, and then I was very happy that it could be on Court TV because people watch Court TV everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just people who go to see off-Broadway plays about touchy-feely things that left-wing liberal actor people do from Hollywood, you know?
Yeah.
And we went out of our way to not be proselytizing and to be as accurate and very, very non-hysterical as we could be and just say, these are facts. They're really interesting stories, and the people who tell them and act them are very emotional and real, but it's testimony. You just make up your own mind here. Look at our cases.
That's great. And now what about the involvement with the Lenny Bruce documentary in terms of...
Well, it wasn't actually... It was basically Court TV combined with the Sundance Channel and made a series of four documentaries about freedom of speech and First Amendment rights, actually. So my piece, a bunch of other very good documentary filmmakers, and I being the one non-documentary filmmaker, I'm not sure what I was doing there, but I was assigned to do something about freedom of speech and specifically kind of stand-up comics and maybe use as a taking-off place Lenny Bruce and the fact that he was just pardoned by our governor, I don't know, about 8 months ago.
Yeah.
Big hot news event, you know.
A little late.
Was a little bit late, but I'm sure Lenny was very, very happy to find out that he was arrested and tormented for the end of his life for saying and doing things that everybody else was doing, except they hadn't offended the Catholic Church in New York, which was, of course, why he was being prosecuted.
Absolutely.
Well, Bob Balaban, like, there's obviously we can do another 3 hours, but we can't.
Yeah.
We gotta go. It was great talking to you. The play is the new play by David Mamet at the Atlantic Theater called Romance. The latest installment of his children book, McGraw, is also available, and you can see him. Just get any video. get any DVD, and there's a high chance of
sometimes I just talk on them at the end, anyway.
All right. Well, there's the. Thanks again, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Here comes the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today, people. One, Bill Clinton's in the hospital. Donate a kidney. He doesn't need one, but it would be a nice gesture. Two, stand at the base of spewing Mount St. Helens with a sign that reads, Mother Nature herself rebels against Bush's environmental policies. Three, observe Procrastination Week by raising awareness of procrastinators, or the alacrity challenged. Wow, is it Thursday already?
Yes.
Four, suggest to the Republicans that before the new bankruptcy law go into effect, they should declare the bankruptcy of their ideas. How about that? Five, today's phrase is dropping the conversation, so they just determined that King Tut wasn't murdered, man. He's the last person from the Middle East whose death can't be traced to U.S. policies. Wake up, sheeple. It's genocide in the library, and we're all Colonel Mustard.
Oh, wow.
What do we got tomorrow?
Well, we're going to talk about faith, Maron, one of your favorite subjects. We're going to be talking with Anne Lamott. Anne Lamott, that is. She's joining us in the studio. Her book is called Plan B, Further Thoughts on Faith, and that's going to be fun.
Okay, Riley. Well, I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you again, Bob. Well,
thanks, Bob.
It's great to be here. I like the sheeple thing. I'm going to take that home with.
Okay.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.